We're holding Nunhei on the base, the fourth line of the wide lines, so eight lines from the bottom. We learned yesterday about the Sikrikun, about these hostile Goyim who would force Jews to give them their land or else they'd kill them. And we said that there was Haruge Mochama, there was a time when Jews were being killed during the war against the Romans, the war that led to the Churban. So now the Gemara is going to start talking about what led to the Churban. So Amar Rav Yechanan, my dichtiv, Asher Adam Mefached Tamid, the Pasuk says, happy is the person, fortunate is the person who's always afraid. Not literally afraid, really, but Tosfos says, in other words, more like concerned about the consequences of his actions. On the other hand, the one who is stubborn, who hardens his heart, is going to fall into evil. So in other words, Shlomo is telling us that a person should always be concerned and looking ahead to the consequences of his actions and not think I can do whatever I want and get away with it. So an example of that in Jewish history, Akamso Bakamsa Chor of Yerushalayim, because of the incident involving Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, Yerushalayim was destroyed. The area of Tur Malka, which is also called in Lashon Kodesh by the equivalent Har HaMelech, was a very fertile and thickly settled area of Eretz Yisrael. We'll talk about it later on Daf Nun Zayin. It was destroyed because of a story involving a rooster and a hen. Ashoka Derispa, Chor of Betar, and Betar was destroyed because Betar was an enormous city. There were many Jews there for a while. It was Bar Kochba's or Ben Koziva's headquarters. And it was destroyed because of a piece of the side of a wagon. Now she explains that Rispak specifically means like the kind of coach that women ride in. So there was a side of it that broke, as the Gemara is going to tell us later on in the story. So in each of these cases, in other words, there was a little incident that happened that caused something much bigger. In each of these cases, of course, you had things that had been building up for many years before that, but this was like in each case the straw that broke the camel's back, kind of. That triggered things to start happening. So in each of these cases, people were careless about the consequences of their actions. The first one, Akamso Bakamso Chor of Yerushalayim, the story is Dahu Gabri the Rachme Kamso Baldevorik Bar Kamso. There was a person whose friend was named Kamso, and he also had an enemy named Bar Kamso. Now, we're going to see in the story, of course, that this Bar Kamsa was a real no-goodnik, and it's interesting, actually, Josephus, in his histories, he lived at that time, he mentions a character named Kamsa Bar Kamsa. He calls him, actually, Kamsus Bar Kamsus, but Patrus is the same one, and identifies him as one of the leaders of the Tzedukim. So if we assume that that is the same Bar Kamsa of the story, then we have a certain rationale why the Balabas doesn't want him at his party, at his meal, with the Talmid Chachamim, because he's a leader of the Tzedukim, but still. So Ovad Su'udasa, this Balabas, who had this friend Kamsa and the enemy Bar Kamsa, he was making a party. Omelo the Shame, so he tells his servant, Zil Aisi the Kamsa, go bring me Kamsa, I want to invite him to my party. Also, isolate Bar Kamsa. Instead, the guy made a mistake and invited Bar Kamsa. Now when the Bala Suda came, Ash say to have a Yosef, he finds Bar Kamsa sitting over there. Omele, he says, Mechdiahu Gavra Bal Dvavidahu Gavrahu. Now look, that person, meaning you, are the enemy of that person, meaning me. In other words, you're my enemy. What are you, my boy self? What are you doing over here? Kumpuk, get up and go out. You don't belong over here. And again, if we say that this guy was actually one of the leaders of Zukim, then he has, in a certain sense, very good reason to say that he doesn't belong there. Nevertheless, though, the fact is, the Marashar says, this is an example, when we say in the Gemara in Yuma, we say that that the cause of the Churban Bayis Sheni was Sinas Chinam, here we have an example of it. The fact is, once the guy was invited already, then he shouldn't have treated him this way. In fact, Mao Shaw says that it might be. So why did Bakamtse even come if he knew that if he knew the guy is his enemy? Maybe he thought that you know what? Mao Shaw says actually the fact is that he's called Bakamtse and the friend is called Kamtse. Maybe they were even father and son. So maybe the son, Bakamtse, thinks to himself, you know what? Especially the guy's inviting me to his party and they're gonna be drinking wine together. That alone gets people more close and friendly to each other. So maybe maybe he wants to make up with me. Anyway, so Omalei, so Bakamtse says, Hoyo Vasoi, it's true, maybe I shouldn't have come in the first place, but once I, Kivin Dasoi, now that, Hoyo Vasoi, now that I'm already here, Shavkan, then leave me alone, V'yehivnaloch d'meimach mada chilnubashasina, I will pay you for what I eat, for what I eat and drink. Omalei loy, and the Balabas says no. Omalei, so he says, Yehivnaloch d'mei palga desu dasich, I'll give you the value of half of your meal. Omalei loy, and again the guy says no. Omalei yehivnos de me kula su dasa. So Bakamtse offers, I'll pay you for your entire meal. Also omalei loy. Omalei loy, he says no. Not to be yadi, he picked him up by the arm, the oikme, and forced him to get up, the abke, and threw him out. So the guy is very offended. Now again, Mao Shaw says, and most other Mephoroshim understand that this is an example of Sinas Chinam. No matter how bad this Bakamtse was, and we're going to see in the next part of the story that he was pretty bad. Nonetheless, though, you don't treat a fellow Yid that way. It is interesting, though, worth pointing out, Rabbi Avigdor Miller, actually, in a couple of his Sfarim, explains the same way he says as the other two incidents that we mentioned before in the heading of the Gemara, the one about the rooster and the hen, and the one about the side of the wagon, which we'll discuss both of those later on Daf Nun Zayin. Neither of those was an Aveda, per se. It was just carelessness to not consider the consequences of their actions. He learns the same way over here. It's not necessarily a bad thing that this guy did to throw out a Russia like Bakamtse. It was just careless of him to not realize that that Bakamtse has an in with the government and could go and take it out on all the Yidden, as in fact he did. But again, Mao Shaw and most Mephoshim talk about that, no, this is the guy did actually do something wrong as a matter of Sinas Chinam. Anyway, Omar, so Bakamtse thinks to himself, since the Chachamim were sitting over there at this party, and in fact, we're going to have soon in the story over here, we're going to have Rav Zecharia ben Avkulos, the Medrash in Eicha Rabbah, when it tells over the story, mentions that he was actually sitting there at the party. So he was there, and apparently other Chachamim were there as well. So since Chachamim were sitting there at the party, v'loy machu bein, they didn't protest this balabas throwing me out, shmamina konichalahu, that shows that they agree with what the guy did. So Bakamtse thinks to himself, ezel eichol b'hu kurtza be'malka, I'm going to go and say lashon hara on them to the emperor. Eichol kurtza is a lashon, is an Aramaic expression that means to say lashon hara. Rashi on the pasuk lo selach rochel ba'amecha gives a long explanation that eichel means to eat and kurtza means winks, and the idea is because when people would say lashon hara, sometimes like they have a little snack or meal together to seal the bargain that I accept what you're saying, and lashon hara isn't always said completely verbally. Sometimes there's winks and hints and things like that involved. The Ramban over there learns differently. He says that eichel means to make noises, and kurtza means to wink, and he says that means like the person starts making noises, like he has something, some lashon hara to say, and the other guy gets curious, and finally he tells him, come on, spill the beans, and he does. Anyway, so it's an Aramaic expression meaning to say lashon hara. So I'm going to go and master on them to the emperor. Also, Amalei l'kesa modo machiyodai. So he goes and tells the emperor, the Jews are rebelling against you. And by the way, I mean, if, you know, here the Gemara is not really giving all the background details. You read Josephus' histories, you find over there that for years and years there had been tensions building between the Romans and the Jews. The Romans were corrupt and greedy. The Jews weren't taking it sitting down. They'd actually not long before that they'd thrown out the Roman governor and various other hangers on of his from Yerushalayim. So now when this Bakamtse says that the Jews are not just rebelling against a corrupt emperor, that they're rebelling against the Romans b'chlal, then they're going to listen to him. Anyway, Omer Lei Mi Yemar. So the emperor says to Bakamtse, who says that what you're saying is true? Omer Lei. So Bakamtse says, Shodulahu Korbanah. Send them an animal for a korban. And Rashi adds, the fact is, lahalach goyim are allowed to send korbanos to the Beis Hamikdash. So send them a korban. Chozis, and you'll see, imakayvin lay, if they actually offer that animal as a korban or not, you're going to see they're not going to want to offer the korban on your behalf. Ozel shodr biyade egla tilsa. So the emperor sends with Barkansa an egla tilsa. Throughout Shas, egla tilsa means a high quality egla means a calf. Tilsa means high quality. Tosfos discusses over here that can mean the word tilsa itself can mean high quality. It can mean the third one born from its mother. It can mean that it's one third of it's at one third of its growth. Based on other Gemaras, Tosfos argues that can't be those two, and that it just means a high quality animal. Whatever the case, it's something that certainly on the face of it, the Kohenim should have no excuse to not offer it. Marshall also adds, though, that the symbolism behind it was, maybe the emperor didn't even realize that he's sending it, but an eagle evokes the Chet HaEgel. And in other words, the message, the hint over here is it's time for the Chet HaEgel to be paid back. As we know that, Kol Poronus, we know that whenever there's disaster that befalls the Jewish people, Rahman al-Islam, there's always part of the payment to the eagle involved. And here there is also that the Beis Hamikdash is going to be destroyed. Therefore, Davka was triggered through a story involving an eagle. He says tilta might in fact mean, tilta literally means third, so it may mean, in other words, according to Tosfos' various explanations, what it means, what third mean, but he says it may indicate, it may also represent that you have three egle azav where the avera has to be cleaned up, the one in the midbar and the two that your oven made. Anyway, Bahadi de Ka'osi, as Barkansa was traveling with the animal from Rome back to Eretz Yisrael, Shodabe Mumma Benivs Fasayim, he made a mum in it, in the nivs fasayim, in the lip of the animal. So he made a cut or something in the lip of the animal. The amulah, the dukin shaba'ayin, others say that he made the mum in dukin shaba'ayin. Now dukin literally means a curtain. So in a number of places in Shas, it explains that dukin shaba'ayin is used to mean a cataract. Now on the face of it, you can't really make a cataract in an animal. So then it might mean, in other words, that instead he made a mum in the eyelid of the animal. On the other hand, the Rashba brings in one of his trugas where they asked him about it, that maybe Barkansa knew how to do something to the animal to trigger that it's going to develop a cataract, or maybe even he swapped it out with another animal. There is in fact actually, the Medrash, when it tells the story, tells it in fact that the emperor had sent many animals and that Barkansa swapped them out with other ones that had more. Anyway, the symbolism behind first, duchta delid dan have a mumma or delid hu lav mumahu. Now, for us to bring such an animal on the Beis Hamikdash, on the mizbeach, that would be considered a mum, and we're not allowed to. The goyim don't consider it a mum, and in fact, for themselves, if they want to bring a korban to Hashem anywhere else in the world, which they're allowed to, even now, for that kind of thing would not be considered a mum for them. Only mechuser eiver, only if the animal is actually lacking a limb. Marshall explains the symbolism whether we say that the mum was in the lip or in the eye. The lip represented the lashon hara that people were guilty of, which okay, Barkansa himself is guilty of it also. And the eye would represent that they were tsorei ayin and they were stingy people. So now when the animal was brought to the Beis Hamikdash, sovereign Rabbanon lekaruvim mishum shleim malchus. The Chachamim of course saw the mum, but they thought we have to offer the animal anyway because of shleim malchus, because of peace with the government, because the consequences if we don't offer this animal are going to be terribly devastating as they were. In fact, the Magen Avraham learns from this halacha that sometimes mishum shloim malchus, like in a case like this, where it would cause tremendous danger to not do that way, you might be able to be over on a lav daradaisa, even though it's a lav daradaisa to offer a korban with a mum. Nevertheless, in a case like this, maybe you don't have a choice. But Rav Zecharia ben Avkulas says to them, Yomru, if you do that, people are going to say, Bali Mumin craven Lagabi Mizbeach. People are going to think that Bali Mumin are able to be offered on a Mizbeach. In other words, they're not going to realize that this is a one-time unique event. They're going to think as a regular thing, you're allowed to do that. So several of the Michtalei. So then the Chachamim thought, you know, we should kill Bar Kamsa. After all, he's a Moiser, and the fact is, you are allowed, Al Pi Halacha, to kill a Moiser. But Deloy lays over Lema, so he doesn't go back and tell the emperor that they didn't bring the Korban and bring terrible consequences on the Jewish people. But Amar Lahu Reb Zecharia, but again, Reb Zecharia said to them, Yomru Matu Mum B'Kodshim Yehoreg. People are mistakenly going to think that he was killed for making a mum in Kodshim, which is not in fact. The fact is that he's over on a lav by doing that, by making a mum, but it's not something that's Chayav Misa, so therefore Reb Zecharia is saying you shouldn't kill him. So the result is that he was able to go back and tell that that in fact they didn't bring the korban with everything that developed from there. So Omer Rav Yechanan, so Rav Yechanan says afterwards, Anvasnusei should have zchayiv and avkulas. The Anvasnusei, Rashi says actually, now usually Anvasnusei means humility, but here Rashi explains it means Savlanusei, his patience, that he has tolerance, that he tolerated this bar kamsa rather than killing him. Because of that, that caused the Beis Hamikdash to be destroyed, it caused the Heichel to be burnt, and caused us to go into Golos from our land, because, in other words, if Reb Zecharia ben Avkulas had told them that, had said, go ahead, kill him, then that would have been the end of the story, and nothing. Then all of the consequences that came from this would never have happened. So what do we mean? So when we say savlanusai, the Chassam Sofer has a long explanation about how exactly what exactly usually amasnusai after all means humility. So why dafka over here? Does it mean patience? So basically, he gives a long explanation that his concern was about chilul Hashem. Of course people know you don't bring a korban with a mum, and people know you don't kill somebody for making a mum and a korban. But he's concerned that what's going to happen, either if they bring the korban and then the emperor kills Bar Kamsa for lying to him, or if they themselves, if the Chachamim themselves kill Bar Kamsa, either way, it's going to create a Chilul Hashem, because people are going to think back to that story where he was thrown out of the party and where the Chachamim were there, and Reb Zecharia figured that would make a Chilul Hashem. But where the vort is, in other words, that really, the Chachamim at the party would have in fact left if Bar Kamsa had been thrown out. They're not going to sit at a party with a rosha like that. Reb Zecharia, on the other hand, who, as we said, was at the party as well, he was more of a savlon. He's more of a tolerant person. Okay, so there's a rosha sitting at the party. I can live with that. I wouldn't need to leave because of him. So we're saying that it goes back to his patience at the party over there, that instead of himself going and telling the Balabas, you know, you need to remove this guy, otherwise all of us Chachamim are going to leave, he wasn't willing to do that, and therefore he figures that if the other Chachamim do that, then it would make a Chilul Hashem, and now he wants to, like, kind of prevent that Chilul Hashem from spreading. That's how the Chassam Sofer explains it. The Maharat Zechayus gives a different point, which is, he says that Reb Zecharia is basically saying, I'm too humble, literally, amasnusa, it means humility after all, I'm not great enough to be able to make a haras shah like this, to be able to say in an emergency case like this, that you should bring this korban or that you should kill Bar Kamsa, I'm not great enough, who am I to make such a decision? And that's an inappropriate amasnusa, Rabbi Yechanan is saying, because the fact is he was one of the greater of the Chachamim at the time, and he should take on the responsibility to give this psak appropriately. And he did not. Marshall also adds, by the way, that the result of this, now, even if it hadn't been for this, there might have been, because of the sinas chinam and all that was going on, there might have been the Romans would still fight against them and then take them into Golos. But nevertheless, the Romans might have left the Beis Mikdash alone. After all, it was a beautiful building. It was one of the wonders of the world at the time. But now that they didn't bring the emperor's korban, so now the emperor and the Romans b'chlal think to themselves, so who needs the Jewish Beis Mikdash anymore? If they're not even willing to bring korbanos over there on behalf of the emperor, then who needs it? And therefore that put the idea in their heads that the Beis Hamikdash itself should be destroyed too. So the Gemara continues, Shadr Ilavayu L'Nirin Peser. So he sent against them. In fact, Maram Shich, by the way, makes a point that why are we putting all the blame on Reb Zecharia if the other Chachamim who were there at the party didn't say anything? The reason is, he says, because then it wasn't Bori Hazeka. It wasn't a clear and present danger yet. So fine, it was careless of them maybe not to foresee the consequences, but now you actually see the hezek right there. So, uh, So therefore, so now Rav Zachariah should have done something. And especially according to the Medrash that says that Rav Zachariah was there at the party and didn't say anything, then that compounds what he did wrong over here. Anyway, so the Gemara continues, Shodur Ilavayu l'Niran Keser. He sent Niran Keser against them. Now, Niran Keser, on the face of it, means the Emperor Nero. The question is, who's sending him? There's nobody higher than the emperor in the, among the Romans that's able to send him. So first of all, I mean, it might, so there's different possibilities. Of course, it might mean that Hashem caused Niran Keser himself to go and lead the army against the Jewish people. So Shodar then would refer to Hashem. It might mean that Niran Keser sent somebody without naming who that somebody is. And in that case, the Lamed would be extra. Maram Sheikh says it might have been that might have been like a relative or something of Niran. So whatever the case, a general or the emperor or whatever was sent to fight against them. Kikosi, when he came to start, before he started the battle, he wanted to do divination, nichush, to see whether he's going to be successful. Shodah Giro Mizrach, he shot an arrow towards the east, also Nofel B'Yerushalayim, and even though he was facing away from Yerushalayim, it turned around and fell in Yerushalayim. Lamayrav, he did it to the west, also north of Yerushalayim, and also it fell in Yerushalayim. It might mean the actual city of Yerushalayim, might be like he made like sort of a model of Yerushalayim to do his nichush with. La'arba ruchas hashamayim, he did it in all four directions, also north of Yerushalayim, and each time it fell in Yerushalayim. So he sees from that he is going to be successful in conquering Yerushalayim. You find a similar thing that says in Pesukim in Yechezkel that Nebuchadnezzar did the same thing when he was on his way to destroy Yerushalayim, where he also did these same kind of similar kinds of simonim, similar kind of divination like that to see whether he's going to be successful. Anyway, Omalei liyinuka psukli psukah. Then at that point, he asks a little Jewish boy, tell me what pasuk you recently learned, where we find all of Shas, as we know, of course, that people do that in order to find like a message min hashamayim. It's like a nevuah ktana, like a minor kind of nevuah. So Omalei, so the boy tells him the pasuk from a pasuk from Yechezkel, V'nasati yastik mosi be'edim b'yad ami Yisrael. I will execute my vengeance against Edom through my people Yisrael. They're going to destroy the Beis Mikdash, but Hashem is going to revenge Himself on them afterwards. Marshall points out, now the first Beis Mikdash, they also participated in the Churban, the Edomim, but then the Nekama didn't happen through Ami Yisrael, it happened through the Persians, who conquered Babel and the other surrounding nations. So therefore, we're meant to understand that this is referring to a future Churban. Omar, Nero, you know, whoever it was that he had sent, thinks to himself, I see what's going on over here. Hashem wants his Beis Mikdash to be destroyed. But then he wants to wipe his hands on that person, meaning on me. In other words, Hashem is going to use me for his purposes because he wants the Beis Mikdash destroyed, but then he's going to revenge himself against me for doing it. So I don't want that. Orak, so he ran away, the Ozal, and he went, the Igayer, and he became a Ger, the Nofik Mene Reb Meir. Eventually Reb Meir was his descendant. So that was his source that he didn't want to go and that he didn't want to be the vehicle through which Hashem accomplishes his purpose. You have a similar kind of thing, by the way, when it comes to, for example, you know, you have the famous question, how is it that the Mitzrayim are blamed and punished for oppressing the Jewish people when Hashem had told Avraham long before, Kiger Yizaracha? And one of the answers is that Hashem hadn't, one of the answers that Ivan mentions over there, they weren't doing it because the Rambam says over there is maybe more relevant, that Hashem hadn't said that any individual mitzvah is going to be doing it, just that collectively it's going to be done. So in a similar vein, and they had the choice, any individual mitzvah had the choice not to. So the same way, Nero realizes to himself, based on this pasuk, that yes, Hashem wants the Beis Mikdash destroyed, but I don't have to be the one to do it. If Hashem wants it to happen, then let it happen through somebody else, and I shouldn't end up taking the blame. So he ended up becoming a ger. Roman histories tell us that Nero was hated by all of his subjects, and he eventually ran away and committed suicide. But we see from this Gemara, at least if we say that, it means that Nero himself was the one who was about to go and attack, and then he did all these divinations and all. Then it would mean that he faked his death and actually ran away. And then, as we're saying in the Gemara over here, became a ger. Anyway. Shadre Ilavayul Aspasionus Kaiser. So next, Aspasionus Kaiser was sent as the next general against them. So at the time, as we're going to see further in the story, Aspasionus was not yet the emperor. He became emperor only afterwards, but the Gemara is calling him Aspasionus Kaiser because eventually that's what he became. Anyway, so he's now the general who's going to be leading the attack against the Jewish people. So he went and besieged Yerushalayim, and the whole siege lasted 3 years. Based on the way Josephus tells it, doesn't necessarily mean that the actual siege of Yerushalayim took 3 whole years. It may mean that the entire war from when they first invaded Eretz Yisrael to start putting down the rebellion until the Churban was 3 years. There were 3 very rich people in Yerushalayim: Nakdimin ben Gurion, or ben Kalba Savua, or ben Sitzis HaKesses. And each of them had their name for a special reason. Nakdimin ben Gurion was called that Shenok Deloy Chama Ba'avora, because the sun shone in his chus. You have the whole story in Tainis, where he had bought 12 wells of water from a rich Goyish landowner, so the Oyler Regal would have water, and then he was supposed to pay back by a certain time, and there had been no rain. Akitzer Amaisa, anyway, eventually he davened and rain fell, but the Goy argued it's too late, the deadline has already passed, and Nakdimin davened, and Hashem caused the sun to stop, to stand still, and to shine through the clouds to show the Goy that he's wrong, and Nakdimin doesn't owe him any money. Ben Kalba Savua is called that Shekola Nichnas, the basic Shu Roiv Kelev. Anybody who went into his house hungry as a dog, Yotzik Shu Savea, would go out feeling full, because Ben Kalba Savua was a generous Baal Tzedakah and would give him lots of food. Ben Kalba Savua, by the way, was also Rav Akiva's father-in-law. Ben Tzitzis HaKesses is called that Shoyis HaTzitzosin Nigreres HaGabek Sosis. His tzitzis would drag on pillows. In other words, wherever he would go, he was so rich, he would always have people putting out pillows for him to walk on, rather than he should walk on the bare ground. So his tzitzis were always dragging on the pillows, and for that he's called Ben Tzitzis HaKesses. Others say Shoyis HaKisto Mutelos Ben Dodi Roim. Another reason he's called Ben Tzitzis HaKesses is Moloshim Kisei, that his chair is among the great people of Rome. In other words, when he would travel to talk and to do business or whatever with the Romans, then they would give him an honorable place among the Roman leaders and senators and whatever. So they were 3 rich people. Marsha points out also that the symbolism of it is, first of all, he said he brings from Medrash Rabbah, who says that actually Nakdimon and Ben Gurion are counted as 2 separate people. Anyway, the point is, he says that these three were saying all of them had Maisim Tovim. And the Gemara in Yuma tells us that the first Beis Hamikdash, we know they were doing Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, and Shfichus Damim, and for that it was destroyed. The second Beis Hamikdash, they were doing Toda, Maisim Tovim, and it was destroyed, as we said, because of Sinas Chinam. So here the Gemara wants to illustrate that even the rich people, who usually, many times, rich people are careless with mitzvahs, nevertheless, they were barely Masim Tovim as well. Nakdimon had the special power of Tfilah. Then Kalba Savua was a generous Baal Tzedakah, and Ben Tzitzis HaKesses is particularly careful with the mitzvah of Tzitzis, and that even when he's sitting in front of even when he's sitting together with the Romans, he's still proudly wearing his Tzitzis. So he had tremendous Maisim Tovim, and nevertheless those weren't enough to avert the Churban. So the Gemara continues. Now, so Chad Amalahu, one of these rich people, said to the people of Yerushalayim, we can survive a siege. Ano Zainalahu b'chiti v'sayri, I will support and sustain the people with wheat and barley. V'chad Amalahu b'dechamro over the milcha. Another one says, I'll supply wine and salt, umishcha, and oil. And v'chad Amalahu b'ditsivi. Another one says that I'll supply wood to be able to cook the food. The Shabbat Rabbanon, the Chachamim praised most of all the one who offers the wood. as we see that Rav Chisda kolaklidi have a muscle of shame, as we see that Rav Chisda would give all of his keys to his mishores to hold on for him, bar mitzvi, with the exception of his key for the storehouse to wood, where there Rav Chisda would keep that key for himself. The Amr Rav Chisda, as Rav Chisda in fact himself says, achla v'adchiti, one storehouse full of wheat, boy shit in achla v'adchiti, requires 60 storehouses of wood to cook it or bake it. So in other words, you see that the wood is something much more, you need a lot more of it, and therefore the one who's offering wood to supply the whole city of Yerushalayim, then he's the one who's offering the most generous amount. And the Gemara says, Havalu l'mezan, Esrim v'chad shata. They had enough of these resources that they could have supported the city for 21 years. And the point of it is, in other words, eventually, how long can you besiege a city? Eventually, the Romans would give up and be willing to come to terms with the Jews. As I said before, I mean, a big part of this whole thing, after all, it didn't start only with Bar Kamsa. For years before that, the Romans had been sending very corrupt governors, very greedy governors, and also like this, once the Romans eventually are willing to talk terms, then you can tell them, send us deal, fine, we're not rebelling against you, we understand we're supposed to be ruled over by Yumen HaShemayim, but at least send us decent governors and don't be harassing us like this. And there were also at that time, some of these governors were fomenting anti-Semitic incidents among the goyim over there in Eretz Yisrael. So all of that could have been part of the peace terms if they could last out the siege. Well, the problem was, the problem is that there were biryonim involved over there. Biryonim literally means like wild, like Rashi explains, wild, empty people, like people who are empty of Torah, and poichazim, like very hasty in their actions. They don't think ahead. The Reb Levi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, actually makes an interesting point. He says the word biryonim can be rearranged to bnei resh yudvav, the children of resh yudvav, which is the gematria of the word gvura. Yerushalayim itself is Yira Shalom, the perfection of Yira, where Yira is part of Gvura. So in Yerushalayim, you had Biryoni, people who really embodied and exemplified Gvura, and therefore they're called Biryoni in tribute of that. Anyway, Omer Lehud Abonim, Nepuk V'Nabad Shlom Abadayu, the Chachamim say to the Biryonim, who were the Biryonim, as we find from Josephus' histories, they were tough people, and there were periods of time over there where they actually controlled the city and wouldn't let anybody in and out. So the Chachamim have to kind of talk business with them. So they say, let's go out. Why do we have to sit through a siege? Let's go out and make peace with the Romans. After all, the fact is we haven't rebelled against them. What Balkansa said was a lie. So let's go out and tell them that we surrender to them and then let's talk peace with them. Lo Shavkinu, the Biryonim, didn't want to let. They were spoiling for a fight. You find again in Josephus' histories that you had groups among them who were saying, we need to be free of the Romans altogether. So instead, the Biryonim said, Nepok v'navid krova ba'adayu, let's go fight against the Romans. Why are we sitting here inside the city? Let's be proactive and go fight against them. Omruhu l'rabbonon, lo yistaya milsa. The Chacham said, it's not going to work out. We're not going to be helped min hashamayim to be able to be victorious. Kamu kolonhu lahanhu amberi dchiti v'sairi. So the Biryonim went and burnt the storehouses of wheat and barley, because they figured this way it'll kind of force the issue. They figured as long as the people have plenty of food and plenty of food and drink and so forth, as we said before, then they're just going to say, okay, so we'll wait it out. We'll wait out the Romans. The Biryonim didn't want that. They were spoiling for a fight. They wanted to go and fight against the Romans, figuring, unlike the Chachamim, that we have, that Derech HaTeva, we have a way of being victorious, and therefore they figured if they burn the storehouses, then that'll force, people aren't going to want to sit there and die of hunger, therefore they're going to be forced to go and fight against the Romans, and the result is, that there was a famine in the city. So what happened during that famine? Mauta bas baisus asirta v'Yerushalayim havia. Mauta bas baisus was the richest woman in Yerushalayim. Shadarte l'shlucha. One day, shortly after this happened, she sends her messenger to the market. But Amrulay, she says, Zil aisi l'smida. Go bring me fine flour. Ad ozel, by the time he got there, is dabbed on all the fine flour had sold out. also almost a smidalek, a chivarteka. He comes back and tells her there's no fine flour, there's regular white flour. Amrila zilaisi, so she says, fine, go get that. Ada ozel is daban. By the time he went, that was sold out. Also, amrila chivarta like a gushkereika. There's no more white flour, there's only pumpernickel flour. Amrila zilaisi, she says, go get it. Ada ozel is daban. By the time he went, that had been sold out too. Also, amrila gushkere like a kimcha desayeika. He says, there's not even pumpernickel left. All there is barley flour, which is usually, food for animals. Amrila zil icv. She tells him, go bring it. Ada ozel is daban. And by the time he went, that had been sold out also. So in other words, on one level, we're saying that, I guess the shliach was a bit of a fool himself, but, it might also be that Marta in the past had been so overbearing towards her mishrosim that, like, the guy didn't dare make any decision on his own. Like, each time he had to go back and check with her rather than even going on after all. He should have thought to himself, okay, let me at least buy what's available and see if she'll accept it or not. But, so it might be, for example, that she had been previously so overbearing to him and to other mishrosim that he was afraid to take the initiative on that. Marsha points out you have four different kinds of flour mentioned over here because you have the Korban Torah has four kinds of bread that comes together with it, and in the schus of that, then people have bread. But here they were kfuya here instead of Torah, just the opposite. We're saying the Biryonim were ungrateful to Hashem and burnt all the food that Hashem had provided them. So therefore, all the four kinds of bread ran out. He also adds that the vote is, we're saying that why we mentioned the point that she was rich, that nevertheless, though, that she, unlike the three rich people that we said before, she didn't go and offer to support the people as well. Had a shlif on the son. At that point, her shoes were off. She was sitting there, she had been sitting there without shoes, Omra, so she thinks to herself, you know what, forget about the shliach anymore, let me go myself and find if I can find something to eat. As she was walking down the street, a piece of dung, a piece of animal waste, got stuck to her foot. Umesa, and she was so pampered and so refined that she was so nauseated by that she died there. Kori Alor of Yechanan Zaka, who lived at the time, said on her, you have an example of, here's an example of what it says in the Pasuk, Haraka Bechava Hanuga, the soft one among you and the pampered one among you, this is part of the Teichacha, Asher Lenissa Chachragla, who never let her foot touch the bare ground, so now she's going to suffer terribly from the siege. So here you have an example of that with Marta Baspices. Ikadamri, others say what killed her was something different. Grigra stood up tzaddik ochla the itnisil mesa. She ate one of the figs that Reb Tzaddik had previously eaten, and she was disgusted by that, and she died. What's the business with Reb Tzaddik and his figs? That Reb Tzaddik yosev aboin shenin betanisa. Reb Tzaddik had sat 40 years fasting, the last 40 years before the Churban, every day he'd been fasting, the lech of Yerushalayim, that Yerushalayim should not be destroyed, because already 40 years before the Churban, we find the Gemara in Yuma and in other places that they were already starting to see signs presaging that the Churban is coming. So the Tzaddik was fasting to prevent that. And he got so thin eventually from that. He had an ochel midi. Whenever he would eat something, have a schazi me'avroi, you could see it from the outside. You could see it going down his throat because he was so skinny and scrawny. So therefore, he had a body. So when he wanted to heal himself, when in other words, he's finished with a round of fasts and he's ready to improve his health, he couldn't eat regular food. Maisi lay gregris, they would bring him dried figs. Mayitz mayu, he would suck out the juice from them. Veshadu lahu, and then throw away the actual, fig. Because he can't eat it. So now she found one of those figs and she ate it, not realizing, and then she was nauseated by that. He had a konicha nafsha. As she was about to pass away, I picked a lechodav of a kasper. She took all her gold and silver, shadisi b'shuka, and she threw it out into the street. Omrach, because she says, "Hi, the mine boy, who needs all the gold and silver if there's no food to be gotten?" And especially now that she's dying, I guess, you know, she's not going to be using it anymore. This is like the Pasuk says in Yechezkel, Hashem says in connection with the Churban, Kaspam b'chutzis yashlichu, they will throw out their silver into the streets. So now you have Marta Basbaisis literally did that, throwing out her gold and silver into the street. Mamshaw adds the rest of the pasuk also continues that gold and silver won't be able to save them on the day of Hashem's anger. They won't be able to satisfy their souls. So that literally tells us about this whole story of Marta Basbaisis. He explains also at the beginning of the pasuk that implies that they use their money for improper purposes. You have a different Gemara elsewhere that says that Marta Basbaisis, which maybe it is the same one, maybe it's not the same one. Anyway, that she bribed the king to appoint her husband as Kohen Gadol. So therefore, like, she had used her money improperly, and therefore this is the result of it. Continues the Gemara. Abba Sikra Resh Biryonin Yerushalayim. Abba Sikra, that was his name, or that was his title. He was the head of the Biryonim in Yerushalayim. We learned in the Mishnah about the Sikrikun, about those, extortionists. And maybe this Abba Sikra is called that because he's like the leader of a gang like that. In that explanation that I mentioned before, Rabbi Yitzchak also points out the word Sikra literally means red, so he's like the father of red, again tying him with Gvura. Anyway, Bar Achzed Rabbi Yechonon Zakkai Hava, he was the nephew of Rabbi Yechonon Zakkai. The Medrash gives him a different name, by the way. The Medrash calls him Ben Batiach, so it might be that Ben Batiach was his real name, and Abba Sikra is his title as the head of the Biryon. Or maybe he went by more than one name, as criminals often do. Anyway. Sholachle, Rabbi Yechonon Zakkai sent a message to Abba Sikra, Tobitzina Lagaboy, come meet me in secret. So the guy comes, Omele, so Rabbi Yechonon says, Ad Emesai Abditu Hochi, how long can you keep on doing this? People are dying of hunger. You've burnt all the storehouses, so now there's no food. You're preventing people from leaving Yerushalayim to surrender to the Romans. You're going to cause everybody to die of hunger. Omalei, so Abba Sikra says, my Eved, what can I do? You think that I'm in charge of the Biryonim, but in fact, if I tell them that we should change our policy, they're going to kill me. So it's out of my hands already. Omalei, so Rabbi Yechonon says, in that case, give me an advice, give me an idea, to Apok that I should be able to get out of the city. Extra to have that Solapurta, we might be able to at least save something. Like this, if all of us remain in Yerushalayim, then we're going to all die of hunger, and the Romans will conquer the city, and there'll be nothing left. If you help me get out, at least we can save something. Omalei, so Abba Sikra says, Nikoit Nafshach with the city, pretend like you're sick. Nekoit Nafshach literally means make your soul. So it means, in other words, that what Rashi says, put out a rumor, put out the news that you're sick. V'loisi kula amo v'lishai lubach, and everybody will be coming to be mevakel chayla. V'aisi midi saria, at some point, take something smelly, v'agni gabach, and lay it next to you, v'leimu d'noch nafshach, so people will think you actually passed away and your body is starting to decay. Then, of course, they're going to allow that the body to be buried. The one thing that the Biryonim would allow people to go out of Yerushalayim for was to bury bodies. And first of all, the Pashtus, dead bodies spread disease, but also the fact is, lahalacha, you're not allowed to keep dead bodies in Yerushalayim overnight. Even nowadays, a person passes away in Yerushalayim, they have to have the funeral as soon as possible. However, only your Talmidim should carry you nowhere else. No one else. Because if other people will carry you, then you don't want them to realize the cattle up. You don't want them to realize that you're actually lighter than you really were, than you really should be, because you're still alive. People know that a live body is lighter than a dead one, because a live person shifts his weight in order to make it easier to carry him. So therefore, if your Talmidim are the ones who carry you, they'll be able to keep the secret, but otherwise people might realize that you're actually alive and you're trying to play a trick over here. So it's not going to be unusual to ask that his Talmidim should carry him. It's normal enough that Tzaddikim, before they pass away, ask that their Talmidim should carry him, so therefore that won't arouse any suspicion. So sure enough, Ovin Hochi said Rabbi Yechon and Ben Zakkai did that. Nichnas by Rabbi Eliezer mitzad echad, but Rabbi Shur mitzad echad. Rabbi Eliezer carried one end of the bed of the orin that Rabbi Yechon and Ben Zakkai is in, and Rabbi Shur carried the other end. He motu lepisa. They came to the gate of Yerushalayim. Bo lemidkarei. The Biryonim, who were guarding the gate over there, wanted to stab him. They wanted to see, is he really dead? Let's stab him, and if he wasn't dead before, he will be now. Maybe they're not so chutzpah, because they actually stabbed the body, but at least maybe they said, we'll stab the other, and that'll startle him, and he'll cry out or something. Anyway, we want to check whether he's really dead. Omelahu, but Abba Sikra says, Yoimru, people are going to say on them, Rabban Dachu. Look at that, these Jews are so chutzpah, they stabbed their own rebbe. Some say it means that it means the Romans who would be watching from the outside would see. Some say it means the Jews who are around here are gonna realize what chutzpah niyachs you are. Whatever the case, anyway, bola midchafe. So they wanted to at least push him and again see if maybe that'll startle him. But Abba Sikra says, people are going to say, whether the Romans or whether the Jews, they pushed their Rebbe. You can't be so chutzpah. Obviously it was an excuse. But in any case, they opened up the gate, Nofak and Rabbi Yochanan and his Talmidim are able to go out. He motalahas, when he gets there to the Roman army camp, to Aspasianus, Omar Shlomo Aloch Malka, Shlomo Aloch Malka. He says, Shalom Aleichem, Emperor, Shalom Aleichem, Emperor. Omale, so Aspasianus says, Michaivas Treik Tala. You really chayiv missa twice in two different ways. Bada the Lav Malka Koris Li Malka. Number one, I'm not the king and I'm not the emperor, and you're calling me emperor, so you stand making fun of me. Or another possibility, the Medrash says that Maram Shif brings from the Medrash that Aspasianus is concerned that if the real emperor hears that that other people are calling him Aspasianus emperor, then they're going to consider him a murdered by Malchus and execute him. So number one, you deserve Misa for that. But two, and second of all, I Malkana, if I really am the king, if I really am the emperor, why did you not come to me until now? Wouldn't it be derech eretz that as soon as I'm the emperor, you should come to me? In effect, Maharam Shif explains, Aspasianus is saying, that really, you know, either I'm the emperor, or I'm not the emperor, and either way, you're chayev misa for doing this. We have, by the way, in the Machzorim, the famous thing before Hamelach and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, the story of Aaron Kaliner, where he fainted one year when he started saying Hamelach, and he thought of this Gemara, if Hashem is the king, why have we not come to him until now? So Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai answers, Deka'amet lav malkana, you're saying I'm not the emperor, Ivra Malka'at. As a matter of fact, most definitely, you are the emperor, or in other words, Rashi says, you're not actually right now yet, but you're going to be very soon, De'ilav Malka'at, because if you weren't the emperor, Lo Mimsira Yerushalayim V'yodah. Yerushalayim would not be given over into your hands. Now, Aspasianus had not actually conquered Yerushalayim yet, but Tosfos says he was on the verge of it by now, that, you know, he had 3 years siege and there was a famine and it's inevitable, the end is very near, then we can already call it as though he actually conquered it. So Yerushalayim wouldn't be given over into your hands if you weren't the emperor. Dichtiv alavonin ba'adu yichol, as the pasuk says, the levonin will fall by an adir, by a mighty one. Ve'im levonin, ela beis mikdash. The word levonin refers to the beis mikdash. Shenemer had ahara tova zeva levonin, as we find that Moshe asks Hashem to be able to see. I skipped the line. Ve'in adir ela melech. So the word levonin will fall by adir. Ve'in adir ela melech. Now the word adir specifically refers to a king. The pasuk says about the Jewish people, their kings will come from themselves. In other words, that they won't be ruled over by goyim anymore when Mashiach comes. As we find that Moshe asks Hashem to be able to see this good mountain, meaning the Harabayis and the Levonin, the Beis Mikdash. The Beis Mikdash is called Levonin. Now she says, because Malbin, when they say in Shor Yisrael, it whitens and cleans up the Averis of the Jewish people. Marshal also adds, the fact is, it was built from Atse Levonin. It was built out of wood from the Levonin forest, and therefore that's another reason it's called Levonin. Anyway, so definitely, even if you're not the emperor yet, but you're on the verge of becoming emperor. and and you're asking then why didn't I come until now if you are the emperor? The reason is because the Biryonim among us wouldn't let us out of the city. So Aspasianus says to Rabbi Yochanan, and by the way, obviously we don't have to imagine that Rabbi Yochanan gives Aspasianus all this drosha of the psukim. He tells him the fact that based on our tradition, the Beis Mikdash is going to be destroyed and only by a king, and therefore that has to be you. The drosha of the psukim the Gemara is giving for our benefit. Anyway, so Aspasianus says to Rabbi Yochanan, let me give you a mashal. Imagine you have a barrel of honey, the darkened koruch alei, and you have a snake wrapped around the barrel, a dangerous snake. Wouldn't we break the barrel in order to get rid of the snake? So in other words, the nimshal is, you should even destroy the city wall and burn down the whole city if that's what it takes in order to get rid of the biryonim. So by the same token, if you're not going to do the job, Aspasianus says, then I'll do it for you. I'll destroy the city, and that way we'll be rid of the Biryonim once and all. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was quiet. He didn't answer back to that. He didn't answer back to that challenge. Marsha adds, in other words, the metaphor is that so what's going to happen? The snake is going to poison the honey because it's going to want to drink some of it. But it's worth it to break the barrel, even though you're losing some of the honey, in order to get rid of the snake and kill it. So the same way, in other words, he's saying it's worth destroying Yerushalayim as long as we get rid of the biryonim. Ishtik, so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was quiet and did not answer that. Generations later, Rabbi Yosef, or some said, Rabbi Akiva, said on that, you have the pasuk, Meshiv Chachamim Ocher, Hashem turns around the wise men backwards, the Datam Yisakel, and he makes their understanding foolish. In other words, they're saying, in retrospect, Rabbi Yochanan should have said something back. He could have very well answered Aspasianus. Shaklin and Savsa, we have a way around it. We could take a pair of tongs, the Shaklin and lay the darkon, we take the snake and kill it, Bachavisa, Shavkin and Law, and we leave the barrel alone. In other words, then the metaphor would be that we were looking forward to, we are going to overcome the Biryonim and get rid of them. And then that way, you'll be rid of the Biryonim without having to destroy the city. So he could have said that, but he didn't. And therefore, Rabbi Yosef or Rabbi Akiva are saying, this is an example. Hashem caused Rabbi Yochanan to not be able to think of that answer on the spot because it was destined, Min HaShemayim, that Yerushalayim is going to be destroyed from the Sinas Chinam. And therefore, Hashem prevented Rabbi Yochanan from thinking of that answer. With that said, the Chochmas Manoyach in the back of the Gemara says that maybe actually, of course, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai knew he could give that answer, but he knows that if you openly contradict an emperor, you can be chayiv misa for that alone. And the whole point is he's trying to save something. If he offends Aspasianus and gets executed, then that's the end of his whole plan to save anything. And therefore, he figured that it's too dangerous to argue back against the emperor. And in fact, he says, the Medrash, in fact, says that it wasn't Aspasianus himself, but Aspasianus' the officers under him who asked Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai this, and he answered with the tongs. So the vote would be, the Chochmas Manoach says, to them he could give that answer. To Aspasianus himself, it's too dangerous to give such an answer. So Adahochi, as they were talking, a messenger came from Rome, Omele, says to Aspasianus, Kum, get up, the Mislay Caesar, the previous emperor has died, the prominent Romans, senators or whoever it is exactly, have decided to appoint you the next emperor. In Goyisha history, you have at that time, by the way, there were like four emperors in that one year. You have different places throughout the empire where people were claiming themselves that they were going to be the next emperor. So Aspasianus Taka was one of them, but that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai realized that he's going to be the one who ends up winning out, took, of course, Ruach HaKodesh. So now he comes and says, it's official, they all decided that you're going to be the next emperor. Have a Sayim Chad Masani. So at that point, when he received the news, Aspasianus was wearing one shoe. Bolam Sayim Alachrin. He wanted to put on the other shoe. Loyayo, and his foot wouldn't go in. Bala Mishlapa La'idach. He wanted to take off the other shoe. Loya Loy Nafik. It wouldn't go out. Omer Mai Vai. So he asks, what's going on over here? Why won't my shoes fit? Omer Lay. So Rabbi Yechanan tells him, Loy Titzar. Don't feel bothered by it. What happened is Shmuel Toiva asked Yalach, you just got very good news. For a Roman, there can be no greater news than he's the emperor. Dichtiv Shmuel Toiva to Dashan Ansem. And the Pasuk says, good news fattens up the bone. So literally, your foot has become bigger, and therefore your shoe won't fit. And Marshall says, in other words, when he's saying, don't feel bad, especially on a stone, maybe I'm becoming sick, maybe my foot is swelling up from a sickness or something, and Rabbi Yechanan Zakeh says, no, it's swelling up from the good news you just heard. So Elamai Takante, so how should I do to fix it up? I can't walk around with one shoe. So Rabbi Yechanan tells him, Lacy Inish by Miyasba Daitif Mine, bring somebody that you don't like. Bring somebody you don't like, the Lechlif Kamach, let him walk in front of you. And then that way you're feeling upset, and then your foot will go back to normal. That's the same part as a different pasuk says, Ruach Nechea to Yabish Gorim. A depressed spirit dries up the bone. So when you feel depressed and sad because you have this enemy of yours, then it'll cause your foot to shrink back to normal size. Omer Hochi Ayol, he did that, and sure enough, he's able to put on his other shoe. Omer Lei, so he says, Ma'achat Chachmito Kulahai, I see that you're so wise. Then why weren't you able until now to come up with some wise plan to be able to come see me until now? Why now when the end is almost near? Omalei loy amilach. So Rabbi Yechanan Zakeh said, didn't I tell you before I couldn't come because of the Begoyim? And Chochmas Manoach says, he may also be hinting, I told you, you know good and well the answer that I could have given with the tongs, I just didn't say it to your face, but you know very well that could have been that. Omalei, so Rasvasiona says, Anonami amilach. I also told you what I told you, that there's no alternative but to break the barrel and get rid of the snake that way. Marshon adds that also Aspasionis is asking, you're so smart, you couldn't figure out a way until now in order to overcome the Biryonim. And he says, the problem is, they're Chachamim as well. the Biryonim also have a Yiddish cup, so it's very hard to outwit them. So I also said that I'm going to have to destroy the city, and that's how it is. Omele, so Aspasionis says to Rabbi Yechanan, Mezel Azil. Now look, at this point, I'm going back to Rome to take up the crown. The Inishach Rinam Shadana, I'm going to be sending somebody else to take over, which the Gemara is going to say is as soon as his son Titus. There is, by the way, a Medrash that calls Titus Bar Achse, or Bar Itse, according to different Gersois, of Aspasionis, meaning that he's the son of Aspasionis' sister, or that he's the son of his wife, which may mean, in other words, that the Medrash may be saying that he's not Aspasionis' legitimate son. Maybe Aspasionis is hinting that over here by calling him Inish Achrina, even though Roman histories have that Titus is, in fact, Aspasionis' son, but maybe the Gemara and the Medrash are hinting that he wasn't really, that his mother was Mazana. Anyway. So Ella boy minai midi de etin loch, but before I go, ask me something that I should give. On the Leis, Rabbi Yechanan says, I have three requests. Number one, ten li Yavna chachamecha. Give me the city of Yavna and its chachamim. Don't destroy the city of Yavna, where afterwards the chachamim moved over there, and it became the headquarters of the Jewish people. From there, Torah, from there, they continued teaching Torah to the whole Jewish people. Number two, v'shoshilta de Rav Gamliel, give me the dynasty of Rav Gamliel, who are the Nesiim. Don't kill them, so that way there'll still be a remnant of Malchus based David. And three, v'asvasa de Masim le Rav Tzadik, and doctors to heal Rav Tzadik, because again, he said Rav Tzadik had been fasting for 40 years, and now he needed doctors in order to heal him. So again, Kori Alei Rav Yosef, B'Tamer Rav Akiva. So Rav Yosef, or some say Rav Akiva, quoted the same pasuk as before. Meisha Chachamim Ocha B'Daita Misato. Hashem turns around the Chachamim's backwards and then frustrates their das and makes their das foolish. Why is he asking for such minor things? He should ask him, leave the Jewish people alone now and don't continue trying to conquer them. The who sovereign. Now, why didn't Rabbi Yechanan Zakeh think of that? He thinks to himself, Juma Kula Hai Le Ovid. Aspasionis might not be willing to do that far, to go that far, something like that. Vahatsolaput, Nami Le Havi, and then there's not even going to be a little bit of saving. You're not going to be able to save anything because you ask for too much. Sometimes you don't get anything. So therefore, he figured the only alternative is to ask for these more minor things. The most important one he wanted is Yavne v'Chachamel, and then the other two are of course less important, but at least they help disguise how important Yavne v'Chachamel is to the Jewish people. There is an interesting idea, though, that's brought. You know, you have the Gemara in Brachos, where before Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai passes away, he's crying, and then his Talmidim ask him why, and he says, because there's two roads in front of me, one to Gan Eden and one to Gehenim, and I don't know, Be'ezah Derech Melichinosi, and of course you have the famous question, Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, the great tzaddik, he shouldn't know whether he's going to Gan Eden or Gehenim. There is an interesting explanation that he's thinking back to this story over here, where maybe after all, what Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Akiva are saying later, maybe it is taka a valid point. Maybe he should have tried that. So he was second guessing himself and saying, maybe because of that, taka, I don't deserve so much Gan Eden. Anyway, continues the Gemara. How did the doctors go about healing Reb Tzadik? So we said he'd been fasting for 40 years and he'd become extremely, extremely skinny because of that. So they had to do it gradually. The first day they gave him water in which barley, in which bran had been soaked. So, and that way he can absorb some of the nutrients from that. Lamacha Maya de Sipoka. The next day they gave him water that coarser bran had been with a little bit of flour mixed in, had been mixed in, and now he's able to drink that. Lamacha Maya de Kimcha. The next day they're able to give him water that had actual flour mixed in, so it's thicker. Adar Rovach Maya Purta Purta, and gradually his stomach is getting wider and wider, and he's able eventually to eat normal food. So the Gemara continues, Ozel Shadri the Titrus Harosha. At this point, Aspasianus went and sent Titrus Harosha to take over in continuing the siege. And we call him Harosha. He very much deserves the title, as we're going to continue in the Gemara. As the Pasuk says in Hazinu, the Omar Eyle came at Sur Chasoyuboy, he will say, the enemy who comes to fight against the Jewish people, will say, where is their God, the rock in whom they took refuge? So the Gemara says, Zet Tito Sarosha, Shechirif Begidif Klapimaila. This refers to Tito Sarosha, who insulted and blasphemed towards Hashem and claimed Chas V'Shalom that Hashem has no power to prevent him. Ma'osa, what did he do? When they conquered the Beis Mikdash, Tofas Zoyna B'yodah, he took a Zoyna by the hand, V'nichnas the Beis Kodesh HaKadoshim, he went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, V'yitziah Sefer Torah, he rolled out a Sefer Torah onto the floor, V'over Alei Aveira, and right there on top of the Sefer Torah, he committed Znus with this woman. Showing, in other words, how much he wants to insult Hashem, so to speak, in his own palace, saying that so to speak, Hashem doesn't have the power to prevent him even there. V'notos sayif the gidras haparoiches. Then he took his sword and slashed the paroiches. V'nasa nes v'hayadam v'vatz v'tviyose v'yotze. A nes happened and blood started spurting out of the paroiches. Which, in fact, over the years, when the Kohen Gadol had done the avoda in front of the parochas, sometimes blood had gotten on it. But the fact is, b'derech hateva, that blood would have long since been dried up. So now Hashem made that it came pouring out. It goes to show, in other words, Hashem showed that Hashem wanted to show with that. Tosfa says how hard it is for him that the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, that he's kaviyochel bleeding over it. With his goyish cup, thought that he had killed Hashem. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, your enemies have roared and made noises in your designated place in the Beis Mikdash. They made their signs be signs. They thought that their simon is a valid simon. So in other words, Titus is thinking to himself, who else's blood could this be if not Hashem? So he thought that he actually that's Abachonin Oima. Abachonin says there's a different pasuk expresses how Hashem acted at this point. The pasuk is in Mi Kamoicha Chasin Ka. Who is like you, mighty Ka? Means Mi Kamoicha Chasin Mekasha. Who is like you, who's so strong and so tough? Shata Shemen Ni Utsi V'Gidufa Shaloisin Oshav V'Shoisik. You hear this goyz. You hear this Titus's insults and blasphemy, and you're quiet. So your midah is that nobody else can possibly be like that. And why the name Yud Kei? Maoshor adds, because that's the name of Golus. Because the name used at the time when the Bais Mikdash is standing is Yud Kei Vav Kei. In Golus, it's only Yud Kei. And therefore, therefore that's why the pasuk uses that name. So it means Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Tana. In the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they taught based on a different pasuk. Mi kamoicha ba'ilam Hashem, who is like you among the mighty ones. Hashem means mi kamoicha ba'ilmi. Who is like you? Who is like you? Who is like you among the mute ones? Nobody but you, Hashem, could be mute at a time like that and not done and pretend like you're mute and you can't say something. And to allow the goyim to do what they're going to do because that's your plan. So the Gemara continues. Ma'osa. So now what did Titus do? Notalos a poroichas. He took the same poroichas that he had just slashed with all the blood on it. Vasoikim and gargusni. He made it like a big basket. The poroichas is 40 by 20 amos, so it can hold a lot in it. The heavy called kalim shav mikdash v'nichan behen. He took all the kalim of the Bais Mikdash and put them inside it. V'oshivan b'sfina, and he brings it into a ship. Leilach li'shtabeach v'iro, that he's going to go now and be praised and have a triumph in his city of Rome. Kenema, and find a pasuk expressing what's going on over here, where Shlomo says with Ruach HaKodesh. He says, and here now I've seen Rishoyim kvurim, where the simple meaning of kvurim means buried. Uva'u, and they come, umimakoim kodesh yahalechu, they come from the holy place, v'yishtakhu ba'ir ashakein osu, and they're forgotten in the city where they did such and such. So poshut pshat means, in other words, that you have rishoyim as powerful as they are in their life, eventually they're buried and everybody forgets about them, but the Gemara Darshan's, I'll take the kvurim ala kvutsim, don't read kvurim, but rather kvutsim, which means gathered, where in fact we find the shodash of Kovar is kibura, means a gat in Aramaic means a gathering, so it's not really changing the meaning of the word so much. Anyway, I'll tickle vishtabhu el vishtabhu. Don't read vishtabhu, they're forgotten, but vishtabhu, they're praised. The beis and chof look very similar. So in other words, the rishoyim gather, having come from Mokim Kodesh, from the holy place, the Yishtabhu Ba'ir, and they get praised in the city for everything that they accomplished. Meaning they're trying to praise themselves, not realizing, in other words, that it was all because Hashem made it happen. Ikadamri Kvurim Mamish. Others say that the word Kvurim can actually be taken literally. You don't need to change it to Kvutzim. Da'afilim Mili, the Metamrin, Igal Yilahoin. It means that even things that normally are hidden were revealed to them. They were able to find all the hidden treasures of the Bais Mikdash. Anyway, as he's traveling on the ship, a storm blew up against the ship and was threatening to sink it. There's even an explanation that the storm was taka affecting only that ship, similar to the ship that Yonah was going on. Anyway, Omar, so Titus thinks to himself, seems that the God of the Jews has power only in the water. But Pare Tavu B'mayim. Pare comes to attack the Jewish people and he drowned him in water. But Sisra Tavu B'mayim, Sisra the same thing. Afuwem Adalai, the Tavani B'mayim, and Hashem now is coming to drown me in the water. Im Giberhu, if he's really mighty, Yalali Abosha V'yasimim Elcham, let him come up to dry land and fight with me there. Yot Sabasko V'amalai, Rosha ben Benoishal, Esav Arosha, Abasko came out and said, you Rosha, the son of Arosha, the descendant of Esav Arosha, Bria Kala Yeshli Ba'olami, I have an unimportant creature in my world, the Yatushma, it's a Yatush, a mosquito or a gnat. And the Gemara interjects, am I total of Bria Kala? Why is it called an unimportant creature? The Ma'alma Islam, a Patna Lesla. It has a way in. It can eat food, but it doesn't have anything to let out the waste. In Hasidus, it talks about the idea, like, therefore it represents the ultimate selfish person. He won't even give out the ultimate selfish creature. It won't even give out its waste that other creatures should have on offer. Anyway, so Hashem continues, Aleli Abosha Matasa Ima Mohammed, go up onto dry land and see if you're able to fight against it over there. Aleli Abosha, Titus comes out onto the dry land, Bo Yatush V'nichnas V'choitmai, a gnat or a mosquito went in and flew into his nose, into his nostril. the nicker b'moshe sheva shanim and started pecking away at his brain for 7 years. Now why dafka was he punished in this way? Marsho explains that he used his speech to insult and blaspheme Hashem. Speech comes from the neshama, and the neshama in turn comes from the nose. And it comes from the brain, which decides what you should say. So therefore, that he's punished by something going into his nostril and entering his brain. There's also an explanation that the same way as a gnat doesn't belong in a person's brain, the same way tichus doesn't belong in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and therefore he was punished in that way. So it was pecking away at his brain and giving him terrible headaches. One day tichus was passing by a blacksmith's shop. Shamakal Arzafta, the mosquito inside his brain heard the sound of the hammer. Ishtik, and it was quiet because like it was drowned out by that. Omar, so Titus thinks to himself, Ika takanta, oh, there's a way of fixing up the situation. Every day then, from then on, he would bring a blacksmith to the palace, and he would have the blacksmith bang in front of him. If the blacksmith that day was a goy, he would pay him 4 zuz, a fee for his work. If it was a Jew, he would tell him, you should consider it enough that you're getting to see your enemies, meaning my punishment, I don't need to pay you. Ad trossin yoimin oven hochi, this worked for 30 days. Mikan ve'elach kimin de dosh dosh. Eventually the mosquito got used to the banging from the outside, and it continued the banging on the inside, and so it didn't help him. Tanya Omer Pinchas ben Aruva. So we learn in a brayse that Pinchas ben Aruva says, "Anihu yisi ben gdolei Romi." I was among the great people of Rome. It could mean that he was a yid, and they're allowing him to sit together with them, like they did ben Tzitzis Akesis. It can maybe mean that he became a ger later on. Whatever the case, he says, "Uchshemnes." When Titus finally died, Potzeris Moichay, they broke open his head, his brain, they found him there. The mosquito had grown to the size of a tzipor dror, which is a smallish bird, a swallow or a sparrow or something, that weighed 2 sloim, which is a couple of ounces. The masnisatana, in a braisa, we learn that a kigozel ben shana was the size of a year old dove, mishkal shnei litrin, and it weighed 2 litra, which is around 2 pounds. So much more than that. Omer Abaya, Naktinan, we have the Kabbalah, says Abaya, Piv Shal Nechoshes, the Tipon of Shal Barzel, its beak was made of copper, and its claws were made out of iron. So that way it was causing Titus much more tremendous suffering over there inside his brain. Why the comparison to a Gozel or a Jew? Marsha says both of those are symbolic of the Jewish people continuing to exist forever. So therefore, it represented that no matter what Titus is going to do to them, the Jewish people are going to continue to survive. And we'll continue the story tomorrow, Bez Hashem.